This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney.
This act flows from a clear and simple wrong. Its only purpose is to right that wrong. Millions of Americans are denied the right to vote because of their color. This law will ensure them the right to vote. The wrong is one which no American in his heart can justify. The right is one which no American true to our principles can deny.
President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law on August 6, 1965. The National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, and the Cincinnati Hamilton County Community Action Agency are co-sponsoring the Bridges to Cross, Building Bridges commemorative march across the Roebling Bridge on Saturday to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. Here to discuss the history and the impact of the act are Dr. Erica King Betts, Executive Director for the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission, Gwen Robinson Benning, President and CEO of the Cincinnati Hamilton County Community Action Agency, and Dr. Michael Battle, Executive Vice President and Provost of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Gwen, Michael, and Erica, thank you for being here this afternoon.
It's
thank
a pleasure
you,
being here with you.
Michael, tell us what led to the creation of the Voting Rights Act? What kind of discrimination were African-American voters facing before this act took effect?
President Johnson articulated it exceedingly well when he indicated that what was going on in America was a basic denial of the fundamental right to participate in American democracy, the denial of the right to vote. Blacks in the North and the South, many people only emphasize the South, but there were blacks in the North who were not able to practice the franchise of voting. So the Voters' Rights Act was designed to correct the inequity in American democracy, to allow all of American citizens to participate in the franchise of voting. And sometimes people raise the question, why is voting essential? One cannot participate on the jury unless they can vote. One cannot participate in many of the decisions in our society unless they're able to vote. So President Johnson was trying to correct a moral, fundamental, philosophical error in America's thinking about freedom. And he ended that quote by saying, "We shall overcome."
What were some of the hardships that African-American voters faced at that time, Gwen? I mean, there are things like poll taxes and all kinds
Absolutely.
Of things that they were doing to discourage voting.
The poll tax. I'm reminded of what my father witnessed as a child watching his father try to vote. They had a jar of jelly beans, and they asked him if he can guess the number of jelly beans in that jar, then he could vote. So no matter what that number was, he was not going to be allowed to vote.
Even if by chance he got it right, they were not going to tell him
right.
He was right.
If he said there was 1,001, he would not have been correct. I would tell you this, humiliation went as far as they were beaten. Their homes were threatened. Your radical groups such as KKK, you know, enjoyed that moment. There are numerous pictures of men and women who were beaten. And even if you saw the movie Selma, you would at least get a sense of what was happening. But I always remember and my father talking about those jelly beans. It still held true for him for a long time.
Erica, who were some of the civil rights leaders who were behind making the Voting Rights Act happen? Who were the key leaders on that?
You hear a lot about MLK, of mm-hmm. course, Lyndon Johnson as well, but there were many unheard voices. There were pastors. There were many citizens. There were business leaders. There were women in the community who were the driving force of support and being the voice and fighting for and fighting against being humiliated and wanting to vote and having that right to speak out. and speak out through the voting process. So there are many names that will appear in our history books and many other names that will not appear, but they're all equally important and they all fought for our rights that we have today to vote.
I think what's critical in that, you know, you hear about Mrs. Boykin, but we need to understand that this fight didn't just start from 1965. It had been going on for a long time. But I think what is more pronounced is the action given by provided by the youth. I mean, you really saw young men and women that were in college that really got engaged. So you had a youth movement that was going through this country. John Lewis got his start. So,
absolutely.
So that's what I really would like to see again, is where that youth movement would happen.
I like the point that Erica made. It's the unnamed, unsung heroes who participated in bringing to reality the Voters' Rights Act. Thousands and thousands of persons who never wanted their names to be mentioned, but who were engaged in the process. Mm-hmm. And what we are hoping to do this coming Saturday is to galvanize a lot of people from around Cincinnati, persons whose names may never be in the print, who may never be on a radio show or on a TV show, but who would come out and participate in a reenactment of a march across the Roebling Bridge to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Voters' Rights Act. And Erica would speak in detail about that, but I hope that we can also talk about the kinds of things that have been happening now that resembles what happened after the Voters' Rights Act was signed in 1965, trying to curtail the right to vote, similar to what happened after the time of Reconstruction, to try to break down the right that African Americans want to vote in the 1860s. But Erica could say more about the details of what's going to happen on Saturday.
And Erica, we'll hold that till the end of the show. We'll come back and we'll talk about that at the very end and remind people about this event coming up on Saturday. What were the key events, Michael, that made the Voting Rights Act possible?
Well, the galvanizing of people in mass, the eloquence of Dr. King, the persistence of Dr. King and Andrew Young and Ralph Abernathy and many others, and also the consciousness of a Southern president, Lyndon Baines Johnson, who did more for civil rights than any other president in the history of this nation, whose consciousness was pricked because of his awareness of what had happened in the South, and also because of the power he had in the Senate, the ability to work with Congress and the Senate, the ability to understand the legislative, the executive, and the judicial processes in this nation. So it took the coming together of white people, of black people, Jewish people, Catholic, people with no religion at all, but who saw a moral cause in defending the right of others to participate and what makes America great. And that is that every person has that one vote that can make the substantive difference in what happens in our society. So it was a galvanizing of multiple forces coming together at the same time to create this wonderful act of legislation.
Erica, how influential were the, like the march from Selma to Montgomery, how big a role did that play?
I think it was a very huge role because it showed people coming together, as Michael mentioned, from various races, ethnicities, ages, religions, all walking together, all fighting for the same thing. So it wasn't one particular group just saying, we want voting rights, we want this civil right, we want this right. It was everyone coming together. And I think that really speaks to the work that we're all doing at our respective agencies of trying to bring people together from all around greater Cincinnati. And we are all saying that we are all in this together. We are one human race, all fighting for human rights, all fighting for civil rights.
The Voting Rights Act, Michael, it came a year after the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Mm-hmm. How instrumental, and if you all want to weigh in on this, that's fine, but how instrumental was that piece of legislation in paving the way for the Voting Rights Act?
Well, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was the act that allowed people of color to understand that collectiveness, persistence, can indeed change the law of the land, and that it can while it will not affect a person's attitude toward you, it would make it illegal for a person to act out acts of discrimination. So the Civil Rights Act of 64 was a pivotal foundation from which we were able to spring to say, no. Not only do we want the right to go into buildings that we were denied, we want the opportunity to vote to determine who's making the laws of the land. And that's really what voting does. It gives you the power to participate in a democracy.
Gwen?
One of the things that in 64, the Community Action Agency came out of the civil rights movement. And it came out because, and we can't lose sight of this, is that it was the unnamed people who had come together who wanted their rights. MLK was blessed to be in the right place at the right time. We needed him because the movements were happening and no one was paying attention until he walked across that bridge with them, until he stayed in the president's ear and in the public sight. So we have to recognize that it took everyone coming together. And we always say we're waiting for that leader. But these people moved without that leader and had it in place. So all the leader had to do was come in and put the icing on the top because he had the connections. The Community Action Agency is a result of the people who started the movement because you had to have something in place to at least assist them while the rest of the legislation was being presented. So you're talking about from 64 to 65, the Community Action Agency was that glue that was the bridge between the 64 Civil Rights Act and then the 65, the Voters' Rights Act.
Erica, how instrumental do you think that Civil Rights Act was in leading up to the Voting Rights Act?
I think it was very instrumental. You always have to have a catalyst, as both Michael and Gwen have been talking about. Yes, the Voting Rights Act was signed in 1965, but there were numerous events that led up to that. There were acts, there were demonstrations, there were marches, there were other protests. There were a lot of singular events that culminated into the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And what I also want to add to that is, you know, I wasn't here in the 60s. Right. I was born in the 70s.
We were there.
She makes us feel old.
Right.
She had to say that.
We were there.
So for me, it's listening to that oral history from, you know, from my grandmothers and from my parents, as well as I have the opportunity to learn from two people who I would consider to be mentors, and Dr. Battle and Gwen Robinson. And you're hearing about the struggles that were happening not only here in Cincinnati, but across the United States. But those are stories that, you know, we continue to hear today, and we, you know, we work together to create programs and initiatives and, you know, all of the wonderful work happening through the Community Action Agency and over there at the Freedom Center that are bringing people from, you know, from my generation. And, you know, and I want to pass this on to, you know, to my kids who, you know, I brought with me here, you know, today, because, you know, they're learning as well. This is a history that we never want to forget, that we want to continue to fight for, and we have to continue to bring others into that fight so they can understand what they're fighting for and why the Voting Rights Act was so important and still very relevant today.
And Michael, after it was passed in 1965, what kind of impact did it have? Was there an increase in African-American voters?
Yes.
At one time,
the state of Mississippi had the most elected blacks in the legislature of any other state in the country after a 1965 Voters' Rights Act. In Georgia and Alabama and all over the South, you saw people being elected to office. And it wasn't only those who got elected to office. It was persons who were able to then support actively political campaigners. Candidates had to then come to the African-American communities and appeal to the churches and the civic organizations. It empowered, but beyond voting, it also empowered membership into certain unions for jobs that made opportunities for people to participate in. It gave the right to participate fully in the American life that makes a difference for all of us. So we could look at the number of elected officials. Mm-hmm. I remember working with Doug Wilder when he became the first black governor to be elected in the state of Virginia.
Yes.
I was on Jesse Jackson, both of his campaigns. I supported Barack Obama when he was elected. And as a result of that, served as a U.S. ambassador for 4 years to the African Union. So there were a number of things that happened as a result of the right to vote and participate to shape the policies of this great nation of ours.
In fact, Andrew Young and Barbara Jordan were the first African-Americans elected to Congress.
Immediately after
that.
So, Gwen, this has opened a lot of doors, hasn't
it? Absolutely. Oh, Lord, absolutely. Many movements to the very day try to copy that style, try to bring that back. But I'm not fully resolved until after Congress passed the new Voting Rights Act Amendment, that's before Congress right now. And every 5 years, I think it is, we have to go back and approve the Voters Rights Act. And Ohio's going through that. And so we have to be mindful that the act is still before Congress and that it needs to be passed. Dr. Battle feels confident it's going to be passed.
A couple things need to happen. We need to restore a form of the power of enforcement that was gutted from the Voters' Rights Act by the Supreme Court.
Right.
That needs to be restored. And I think what's going to happen from some of the bills that John Lewis has put forth and others have put forth, that there would be a strengthening of that provision that allows for some federal oversight, but it will not be limited to the South. It will be something that will reflect a nationwide intent to make sure that there's no disenfranchisement by laws, rules, and regulations that prohibit the right to vote. I think voting should be so free and so easy that it should be one of the simplest things that anybody can do. Go to the poll and vote. And any kind of act that inhibits or prohibits that should be overcome.
And Michael, if I could, when you talk about it being gutted, you're talking about the Shelby County ruling.
Right.
The Supreme Court ruled that there was it's part of the provisional, special provisions that are in the Voting Rights Act, which said that there was to be monitoring of certain areas due to past discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt that because you moved into more modern times, it didn't apply anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't touch the general provisions of the Voting Rights Act, right? So those are still strong and intact.
They are still intact. It was just that
Section 5,
capacity to examine and to require states to appeal to the federal government before they could do things like gerrymandering districts and pass new laws that could be perceived as being restrictive.
Now, Erica, we'll ask you this question since you're from the younger generation, and we all know that. This act provided the right to vote. How tough is it today to get people to get involved and use that right, especially among younger people?
I think that younger people want to be involved. I think they want to be involved in voting as well, but you also have to engage the younger populations as well and help to connect them to the Voting Rights Act and to civil rights and why people were fighting for the rights to vote. So I think it's going to require bridging that generational gap and reaching out to college students, reaching out to young professionals, making sure that we're going into the high schools and ensuring that high school students understand why it's so important to vote. So bringing these life lessons into the classrooms and meeting young people where they are.
And there's a corollary that often is missed, and that is trying to get young people to understand that there is a direct relationship between one's ability later on in life to vote and one's getting involved in the criminal justice system, particularly if a person ends up committing a felony. In many instances, once one commits a felony, they are prohibited to vote for the rest of their lives. So we have to teach that it is not only the right to vote, but we must transform the criminal justice system that runs so many young people through it and gets them engaged at far too young an age. And then when they get old enough and they end up committing a more serious crime, they end up losing their franchise to vote. We have to be cognizant of that as well.
But you also realize that our public education, our whole school system has to, they've gutted a lot of our programs that we had in our earlier days, in our civic classes.
Civics, yeah.
Civics, you know, they gutted those kind of programs.
Erica, tell us about the event that's coming up this weekend.
This entire year, we've been working together, the Hamilton County Community Action Agency, the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, and the Cincinnati Human Relations Commissions. We're all co-sponsors in this march. On this Saturday, August the 8th at 9 a.m., we will be marching across the Roebling Bridge to the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. We're asking that everyone arrives on the Kentucky side of the Roebling Bridge by approximately 8:30 because the bridge is going to be closed. So we want to make sure that people have an opportunity. If you're parking in Kentucky, mm-hmm. you're right there, and then you can just start the march there at the beginning of the bridge. Or if you're on the Cincinnati side, you can park in the parking garage nearest to the National Underground Railroad right. Freedom Center, and then you can walk across the bridge and join everybody, and then walk back across, and your car will already be there. We're going to have a welcome from the mayor of the city of Cincinnati, as well as the city of Covington. There will be some proclamations that will be presented. State Representative Alicia Reese will also be present, as well as several other dignitaries. And then we will go inside, and we are going to have a keynote speaker. Betty Daniels-Roseman, who is a local freedom fighter, is going to be our keynote speaker, and she's going to be talking about Cincinnati as well as the United States 50 years ago and what it was like and what the fight looked like to fight for voting rights. And then after she concludes, we're going to have a panel, a very diverse panel of area youth who are going to talking about what they are still marching for today and what they hope Cincinnati looks like 50 years from now. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a day full of commemorating not only the Voting Rights Act, talking about Cincinnati 50 years ago, but we're starting to plan for what do we want our Cincinnati to look like 50 years from now. We want it to be not only very diverse, but we want to have an inclusive city where all people feel heard and understood.
So you want a dialogue to come out of this.
Mm-hmm. We definitely want a dialogue, and then we're going to be passing out I March For signs, because people today are still marching for many things, whether it's education, whether it's prison reform, it's their families. Whatever people are marching for, we're going to be asking them, what do you march for today? So they'll be writing that in on their signs. They'll be taking pictures as well. And then we're going to collect all of those forms, and we're going to turn those into themes as well as groups in the future so we can actively work on addressing those issues.
Well, Gwen, Michael, and Erica, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Dr. Erica King-Betts is Executive Director for the Cincinnati Human Relations Commission. Gwen Robinson-Benning, President and CEO of the Cincinnati Hamilton County Community Action Agency. And Dr. Michael Battle, Executive Vice President and Provost of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives of our program at WVXU.org. Today's show was produced by Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds. Rick Andrus was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney.